Okay, it is May. God, are we on the 5th already? I think it's the 4th, actually. May 4th.
It is the 4th.
Thursday. And we're out here at Hippie Planter around 11:30 talking to
Anna.
And Anna, last night you were in jail. Did you rape somebody, stab someone, perhaps broke a couple windows?
No, I think I was smiling a little too much, though.
About what time of the evening were you approached by those guardians of the law?
It wasn't evening. It was about 11 o'clock in the morning.
Yesterday morning?
Yeah.
And where were you?
I was in Grant Street Park.
And what were you up to?
I was just sitting down. I stopped. I was walking through. Me and a friend had bought a 40-ouncer. We were just walking through. We stopped to talk to some friends, and we were going to be on our way, but the next thing you know, the ranger pulled up, and she stopped us. And my other friend, who had bought the beer, she was out in the field talking to another friend, so I claimed it as mine and said I shoulder-tapped it or whatever, so she was writing me up for a ticket for a minor possession of beer, and that was going to be all. And then she was just going to leave, but then when the male cop showed up, he came up to me and said I was under the influence, which I wasn't, and they had no proof that I was because...
Did they give you a breathalyzer test?
No, he didn't.
Did they give you a blood test?
Not at all.
Did they offer to give you either of these tests?
Nope.
Go ahead.
All he did was stand right in front of me. All he did was stand right in front of me so no one else could see what I was doing and asked me to open my eyes up. And so I did. And he asked me to open them again, and I did. And he kept saying that I wasn't opening my eyes wide enough for him or something like stupid like that, you know. And so then he just said, oh, well, since you're not going to do what I asked you to do, I'm going to take you in jail. And they put me in for 5 hours.
Without charges, though. You didn't get charged.
No, but they held me, and I had stuff to do. I had a little boy to take care of at 5:30, which I was really worried about getting back at time, in time, you know, mm-hmm. to be able to be there when he got off daycare and stuff. Mm-hmm. And they didn't give a fuck. Excuse my language, but...
You live outside?
No, I live with my mom right now here in Santa Cruz. She lives here, so...
Well, you're obviously a dangerous criminal. I'm going to try to get a police officer to take you into custody. Wait here. Okay, we're talking to...
Gregory.
And Gregory, you said you have a concern about a merchant?
Yeah, like El Bob, the other day, you know, I put it on a report, too. I told the cops I would like to press charges on him because I was cutting my hair, and a friend was doing it. I'm not going to say no name. What's her name? She was cutting my hair the other day.
Take your time.
She was cutting my hair the other day. And all about comes to me and says, can't I catch a hair around here? And I asked him, what's wrong with cutting my hair? And, you know, like, and he goes, don't you get fucking, you know, he starts cussing at me. He puts a fist towards me and called me a bastard. And I stood up and was like,
called you
a motherfucking bastard, you know?
He used those specific words?
Yes,
what
he
words
did. What he used was a motherfucking bastard. You know, what are you going to do, punk ass bitch, you know? And I was
let's get exactly what his words are. You remember. Try and be as specific as possible.
In the specific words of what I just said, that he called me a motherfucking punk ass, you know, a little bastard. And I told him, and I was like, what did you just call me? And I stood up and it's like, he goes, come on, hit me. And it's like, he's trying, and I was like, why? So you get the cops on me and said I'd done something first. He put me in jail. Mm-hmm. And I told the cops that I wanted to press charges on him for, you know, attempting assault. And the cops, so I had to go to court with him.
Did
I got my letter.
Did you sign a complaint?
Yeah.
And what day did this happen?
This happened about, I believe, 4 days ago.
And today is Thursday, so it happened Monday or Sunday?
Yeah, around Monday.
About what time?
About what time? Around the, kind of like in the afternoon.
Okay. Well, keep us advised and keep your cool.
All right, thank you.
Good evening to all you out there in Radio Land, wherever land that is. This is Bathrobe Spear, Uncle Robert here talking to you on Free Radio Santa Cruz. It's the May 4th, 2000 show of Bathrobe Spear's Broadsides. We're going to be catching up on tapes from the street. We're going to be examining the usual grim topics of the little amusing sidelights. This leading band's recent progress at City Hall as we attempt to pressure and successfully pressure Mayor Sugar into meetings. We'll see if these meetings come to anything. Stay with us. Yeah. welcome once more to Bathurst Spears Broadsides. Where is that bouncy, bouncy echo? There we go. I'm your host, Bathurst Spear, Robert Norse. This is 96.3 FM, and we're going to be with you for the next 2 hours from 6 to 8. Our topic, as ever, is the rights of people on the streets, basic civil rights for folks who are out there in the most vulnerable way and trying to live their lives the way they need to. This usually goes into topics like police misconduct, occasionally police good conduct. There isn't too much of that, but if it happens, we report it. The sleeping ban, the city's anti-homeless law, which makes it illegal for homeless people to sleep or even to cover up with blankets after 11 o'clock at night in any public area and on much private property, even in their own car in the city, even if the car is legally parked, concerns the criminalization of homeless people in public spaces and the attacks on homeless activists. And I also cover things like the drug war, since the drug war particularly impacts poor and homeless people because they're on the front lines. They're the ones who police use the drug laws as a pretext to search, ID check, interrogate, and indeed, if they feel like it, imprison or drive out of town, which is, of course, the significant complaint we've had for years around open-ended laws like the city's anti-homeless sleeping ban, Municipal Code 6.36. We have been doing a protest, some of us here, at HUF, Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom, a civil rights group for homeless people at City Hall. HUF and the campaign to end the sleeping ban, which has been fasting and engaging in other principled protests for the last 4 or 5 months, since actually January, when Mayor Sugar showed he had no interest and the council showed they had no interest in responding even to their own $10,000 homeless issues task force and its emergency recommendation that homeless people be allowed to sleep and to indeed cover themselves up with a tent from the rain if there are no legal places to go, which of course there aren't, there haven't been, and City Council has taken no effort to create any, though it is true that Mayor Sugar has been sounding out the governor on releasing the armory for the year, which would allow a small number of homeless people to go inside the armory. It's 100 people is the limit on the armory, according to the current Homeless Services Center estimates, and then for the first time to use the armory parking lot. These have not been okayed. I want to point out, I want to again repeat, these have not been okayed. They need to be funded by the city or by some other agencies. They have not been. The word informally is that that permission has been granted, though it's interesting to me that Mayor Sugar has not made that as an official announcement, which indicates to me that he doesn't want to see pressure put on the city and the county to fund this, because if it actually had been granted, as I understand it has from Mayor Sugar's private conversations with Area Chamber of Commerce CEO Michael Schmidt, who reported this conversation to me, that in fact the armory has been specifically allowed by the governor now for the first time for year-round use. That's up at De La Vega Park. Though it has been granted by the governor, Mayor Sugar has not announced this officially because that would have put pressure on the city council to actually fund this, even though it's not a terribly good place for people to go. It's the end of a bad road. It's concentration camp-like setting. Involves waiting in a line early in the evening to be released early in the morning and to be held up there all night, locked in. It's on the floor of an armory building with a thin mat and a blanket or two. So it's not what you would call ideal, and it certainly doesn't cover even the majority of homeless people. But interesting to me is that there's been no push to fund even this. So it seems clear to me that the homeless are not a priority in this administration, at least in any visible way. Now, if you talk to Mayor Sugar about issues like the sleeping ban, he will tell you that he needs to gather the votes first, and then he will do something. So, for instance, we've been at his office telling him, many of us, hour after hour, day after day, for the last week, since Monday noon of this week, I should say, saying, Mayor Sugar, we don't want you to wait until you get the votes. We want you to come out and say, end the sleeping ban now. Here's the language I want. Here it's going on the agenda. I'm the mayor. Let's talk about it. Let's vote on it. If I'm voted down, so be it. It'll be on the heads of the rest of the council. No, no, Mayor Sugar doesn't want to risk his gentle relationship with all the other council members this way. So instead, what he's going to do is he's going to have yet another meeting on Monday with the other potentates on the council, specifically Catherine Byers, councilwoman who's just returned from her holiday in Europe, and she's back, no doubt driving around in her pretty red Jag, and she's a sweet old lady, she always is. I don't mean to use the term in a deprecatory manner. I'm kind of a cranky old man, if you want to use those terms. But she gives this veneer of being this the kindest, sweetest lady you'd ever see. And in fact, of course, she's the person that vetoed any change in our vicious sleeping ban law that would allow homeless people to sleep. After a 3-month investigation last winter, I should say the winter before last, in 1998-1999, when the task force to examine the camping ordinance held literally dozens of hours of hearings, she finally decided, without any detailed investigation of the real changes that were proposed in the sleeping ban, no, I won't do that. There's just no place for them, the homeless. And she apparently valued the opinions of 70, I would call them NIMBY bigots, or I think that's really the way to put it, NIMBY bigots in houses who would prefer to have no civil rights for 700 to 1,500 people each night, than the opinions of hundreds and hundreds of people who wrote letters, signed petitions, and spoke at city council publicly urging the mayor to do something. Then they had a homeless issues task force, lasted all year, and that task force came out with the same opinion that had been presented to Mayor Byers before, and that was end the sleeping ban, end the camping ban. Do what you need to do, since there are no legal places to sleep. Make it at least legal for a person to shelter themselves and sleep if they're not violating any other laws. Byers has consistently refused to do that, and Mayor Sugar, our current mayor, refuses to even put the issue on the agenda because he bows to Byers on this issue. So for the last week, we've been sitting in his office trying to get the mayor to agree. We wrote him a letter a month ago asking him to do something before May 1st, which is when the Interface Satellite Shelter Program, that's line up and get on the floor of a church for a night if you're one of 28 lucky people, and that doesn't happen for many people since there's 700 to 1,500 homeless people outside and quite a considerable number trying to get into that, quote, program. That program dropped to 28 spaces on May 1st, and we said, Sugar, do something before May 1st. You know, he should have done something, of course, the day he got into office, but Mayor Sugar, once he was voted down on the issue a year ago, has essentially shut his mouth and said very little. Although apparently he perceived himself as a very high-profile campaigner for the sleeping ban, or one who comes out publicly and advocates for it. That's not my impression. And if anybody's out there who thinks they have a different sense or different opinion of what's going on or wishes to join this discussion, please interrupt my tirade. I'm eager to hear you call in, and the phone number that you can call in on is 427-3772, 427-3772. FRSC, and of course those are the call initials for Free Radio Santa Cruz, which is the radio station you're listening to. Free, uncensored radio, community radio, your radio. So, indeed, use your radio and give us a call at 427-3772. Phone lines are open. Anyway, more about the protest. We've been, some of us, sitting in the council offices. That's down at 809 Center Street, right next to City Hall. It's actually in City Hall. It's kind of the next building over on in the same general City Hall area that you would find if you went to the City Council, as some of you have, at 7 o'clock or in the evening when the council sessions are usually held every second and fourth Tuesday. And the council offices are open from 8 in the morning to 12 and then from 1 to 5. And there are three seats in there. You can just sit down and say, hey, I'm going to sit here and wait for Mayor Sugar, Catherine Byers, Councilmember Fitzmaurice to show up, Mike Rotkin, you name it. And I want to know why you're not taking action to put the sleeping ban on the agenda and committing yourself to language to end it, even if Catherine Byers does prefer to run around in Europe and say, gosh, I don't know, and let's wait for a few more meetings to think about that. She's been using this line for a decade, fundamentally. She's been in power since 1989. I should say she's been in office since 1989. I would say in power probably since, well, certainly since 1998 in the fall elections, but I would have to say probably before that time as well, when she was often in a minority with Celia Scott and gave everyone the misimpression that she would lead a new majority. In fact, of course, she has proceeded to sell out the Hispanics in the Beach Flats with the Dolphin Lee Demolition Program, the Mercy Housing, Affordable Housing Hoax, as I call it. And we're going to be talking a bit about that. Actually, probably should talk about that now, because even as I speak, the Mercy Charities Affordable Housing Group that is pushing this $12 million boondoggle, which will essentially set up a housing project that demolishes existing affordable housing for poor Hispanic people in the beach flats at the Dolphin and Lee Apartments, and set up a new project to which most of those people, at least in the Lee complex, will not even be eligible. We've talked about this a lot on the show and talked about it at City Council. You're going to hear some tape on that tonight. There's a meeting of the advisory board of this project happening even as we speak. For those of you who want to go down and try to join the festivities and talk a little sense to these people. Now, I've been told this is a closed meeting by Elizabeth Vogel, who is the PR queen for the Mercy Charities Housing. She's the one who actually has given me a lot of information and time, at least some months ago she did, and I was able to get in touch with her yesterday after repeated phone calls that were unreturned for the last month. We had an appointment to have a long conversation today at 2 o'clock on the issue of this housing hoax, as I call it, or project, as the city council likes to call it. And for some reason, she said, without giving me a reason, she announced she's canceled that meeting suddenly, and which ticked me off considerably, since there are Street Spirits, the newspaper that I write for and help distribute and help and actually gives homeless people financial backing. They sell it on the streets, waiting up in San Francisco. And had I known that Elizabeth Vogel was going to cancel her meeting, I would have hustled up to San Francisco instead of sitting around waiting for her. But I will learn in the future not to wait for her, and just thought I would grumble a bit on air. I think it's really an example of how she, the redevelopment agency of the city, and the city council, actually the redevelopment agency is really the city council, it's the same group, but the redevelopment agency staff, Seal Cirillo and others who run this whole program, are singularly unresponsive to the public on these issues. Now, I've got to say this. Seal Cirillo has, when I've requested information, responded to it, at least formally responded to it. That is, she has written me back a letter. She did so promptly last week, and I thank her for that, and I have more questions now than I started with because of that letter, but I at least have some statements from her department, which I think is important. Public officials have to be accountable. We're talking about a real crisis for hundreds of people in the beach flats. They'll be meeting tomorrow night at 7 o'clock themselves in a meeting to organize as tenants against this project. At least that's, I believe, where they're going. They've already issued a statement. Every tenant in the Lee apartment, and that's, I think, that's 12, 15, somewhere there, that number of families. These aren't single occupancy apartments. They're families that live in each of these apartments. They've said, we don't want this project, and if you do, we want you to sign this guarantee that we're going to, if you're going to force it on us, sign the guarantees that we will get adequate money to have housing while you tear down the housing we're in and build this project, and then a sure return to the project. And the city council's response to this formal request from their attorney has been silence. Silence. And more silence. So what I gather from that is that the city council wants to make a lot of promises, but when it comes time to sign on the dotted line, it's not there. So activist Becky Johnson, who's also the producer for this show, has hustled down to this meeting, which, by the way, for those of you who are interested, and I should have said this before, it's at 125 Sycamore, and that is right at the end of Pacific, where Pacific meets Front Street, 125 Sycamore in the Sycamore Housing Project in the community room. So if anybody's interested in checking this out, we have requested it be opened up to the public. It should be open. It was certainly in part created by City Council. This whole project is being funded by massive amounts of city money. There's absolutely no reason why they have any legitimate purpose for doing this behind closed doors. It's clear to me that they prefer to do it that way because it avoids embarrassing questions from critics who I think raise very important and legitimate issues, because the more nonsense goes on around affordable housing, the less real affordable housing poor and homeless people get. It seems to me pretty clear. And therefore, I think it's good when the public injects itself into this discussion. In fact, it's the only way we get any integrity from these people in office is when they are challenged persistently, publicly, and if necessary, loudly and obnoxiously. I mean, you can try being polite, and I think you should, and I do that all the time, but when they don't respond, then it's time to start embarrassing them repeatedly until they do respond. And that traditionally is how you get action from politicians, short of revolution. Revolution, of course, is another alternative. And for those of you who want to get into that, that's probably a way to go if you had the adequate means. I don't think that those means exist at the present time. So that's another subject we're talking about. But because my voice is often taking up much too much of this show, let's hear a few more voices. You're probably going to hear mine thrown in here. We're going to go back about a month ago to the turmoil down on Pacific Avenue, where there was a table, and maybe again a table, around the sleeping ban repeal issue. There are people fasting tonight, going without sleep, some going without food, as part of the David Silva fast. It's not just him, it's many, many others, to end the sleeping ban. There are people who are circulating petitions to put the sleeping ban repeal on the initiative. There are some of us planning cooking soup for a hot meal tomorrow at City Hall. We're having it every weekday morning at 8 o'clock in the morning, and you can get it later than 8 o'clock. We keep it longer. Just come down to City Hall, 809 Center, and just have a seat in the City Council offices and wait to talk to you, the City Council clown member of your choice on this issue. And that's what we're trying to do, is essentially make a very polite but persistent presence there around the issue which they refuse to address, which is the homeless people and the criminalization of people outside, the violence that goes with that, the police harassment that goes with that, the loss of dignity, the sickness, the alcoholism, the drug abuse, all of which comes certainly in part from being treated like a dog, like having no hope coming from that situation. And it looks like we have our first call of the evening.
David.
I want to do a commercial.
Go for it.
The Green Party and the Ralph Nader campaign and the campaign in the Sleeping Ban presents live in concert at the Santa Cruz Civic June 3rd.
Whoa.
Naked Ape, Dillagaff, Worm, Berlacticus Undertow, and Exploding Crustaceans.
Whoa.
$12 in advance, $15 at the door. The Green Party does have some complimentary tickets for people with special conditions. And there's also a large disability section that's being set up for the event.
And where is this again?
This is going to be at the Civic Auditorium.
Mm.
June 3rd is the last Saturday before finals, kids.
Oh, boy.
So it's a good time to, you know, if you haven't studied by then, why bother, you know?
Now, what about Slow Gherkin, our old pal?
Slow Gherkin, you know, they just were booked on June 3rd, and they were the first ones to come forward. And they're going to do a couple more concerts for us over the course of this summer. So they are still online. It's just that June 3rd ended up being a bad day for them, and that was the only day we could get the Civic. You know, we originally tried to do this on the 13th of May, and that was the whole town was booked, the 13th of May, and it just there's some kind of a fluke. Actually, Christopher Crone suggested, why don't you try the Civic? And I said, well, that's just too much overhead.
Mm-hmm.
But we got a couple of loans made to the campaign in the sleeping ban, and of course the Nader money helped.
How much does it cost to rent the Civic?
Well, it all depends on what kind of event you're doing and how many bands you're having and whether it's just speakers and so forth like that. You can go anywhere from $1,000. You can go anywhere from, let's say, $1,300 to $5,000, depending on how big of an event you're putting on.
So you're hoping to get a pretty big turnout here.
We need a really big turnout. So if you get your tickets, if you use a credit card, know that if you go to Ticketmaster, you're going to be paying $2 or $3 extra service charge, but if you go to the Civic box office, you don't have to pay all those extra service charges, just a minor service charge. And if you get them from the Green Party, you can get them at the Green Party table and the campaign in the sleeping ban table. On International Peace Day, we'll have some. Anytime we're tabling, we'll have some. Anyway, we got some people volunteering to table now. People came back from the state meeting all invigorated and ready to mobilize.
Now, by June 3rd, I guess you'll be past your date on the sleeping ban initiative petition, right?
No, it'll be past the artificial deadline to put it on the November ballot solely by signatures.
Mm-hmm.
We still have the second meeting in July of the City Council for them to put on any petition that has, whether it's past signatures or not. But by then, our deadline is actually July 13th.
Mm-hmm.
But they have on the second meeting in July, they have an opportunity by that time to put it on that particular ballot, November ballot. Otherwise, we have to wait for whatever council to put it on whatever next election. We didn't go for the 15%, we went for the 10%. You have to file that in advance.
Mm-hmm.
So that means that you don't call a special election. You just end up on the next available election.
Now, this is different than the district election people who went for 15%?
Well, that was not only the 15% because of getting on, you know, as soon as possible. That was because it's a charter change.
I see.
See, this was an ordinance change, not a charter change.
Uh-huh.
They're changing the whole system of democracy there, and it's a balkanization thing. So, you know, they're addressing a problem. You know, the problem of fair representation is a real problem, but they've got the wrong answer. So I just want to keep on advertising June 3rd because, you know, we got some people that really good, decent people put some loans out to make this thing happen. And this is going to be a real rock and roll night. A
couple of questions.
And there just
may
be a surprise guest speaker.
Ooh.
I can't say Ralph Nader's name on the air.
Don't say Ralph's name on the air.
But
you'll actually talk about the sleeping van this time, maybe?
Yes. In fact, this is the sole purpose.
Will he have a blanket with him?
That's not a bad idea, Robert.
I'll bring a pie with me.
You better pass on that.
Tell me, David, you've been... You've been
I'm
watching,
hungry, Robert.
No. David, we should point out for all of you out there, has been fasting since January 1st, and you are yourself a man with AIDS.
Yeah.
So that's not exactly the easiest thing for you to do.
Yeah. But I'm not the only one HIV positive that's fasting. There's others.
Uh-huh. And I know that you've noticed that Catherine Byers, who I think is really the key player in this whole issue, has been out of the country until a couple days ago.
Yeah.
When I spoke to her this morning in City Council chambers, she was not particularly positive about any changes in the sleeping van. Now, I know that she wasn't terribly negative either, but until I see some really positive signs from her, I tend to think, you know, it's the same old story with her.
Yeah, well, we're doing this, the phoning of everybody that's participated in any way, in any of the fasts, and anybody that's signed up for any kind of civil disobedience, and we have the phone tree working, calling people. It's a meticulous, long, arduous job. But we're letting everybody know the pressure, to keep the pressure up, you know, send your letters in if you fasted, you know, why I fasted.
And you're going to be making a rare personal appearance at City Council offices tomorrow, right?
Yes, I am scheduled to be the City Council office from 3 to 5 tomorrow.
You're going
to
be the last shift of the week.
I'll be the last shift of the week, yeah. They get to see my dour face.
The shaft on the last shift.
After they pick up their packets that don't have the sleeping ban repeal on the agenda.
Indeed, so they had the opportunity to put it on the agenda this week, but for some strange reason failed to do so.
Well, there was a meeting scheduled to talk about the language, and I was invited to that, and it seems that Michael Schmidt couldn't meet this week, so they put it off till next Monday.
Well, I know, actually, Mayor Sugar talked to me about that meeting, which, as for those of you who are interested, it's at 323 Cedar Street, 8 a.m. on Monday morning, and it's not clear whether the public is invited or not. The mayor.
Well, I look at it as a kind of negotiations kind of round table. So, you know, and I like open public meetings, but with negotiations, it's kind of nice to have, just a small group of hard hitters, you know.
It might be good to have folks outside sort of cheering on the participants.
Hey, there you go. Thank you.
Yeah, you know, I mean, it's interesting. Mayor Sugar actually suggested, first he said that I wouldn't be invited. Then the next day he said, would I agree to give up the protest if I were invited that we're having this? I said, Mayor Sugar, I said, I don't care how many times you meet with how many people. The real question is, are you going to go before City Council with language to end the sleeping ban that you will publicly commit yourself to? And he has said, no, I will not do it unless I have the votes.
Well, I was invited to attend this meeting that is specifically for the purpose of decriminalization of writing up decriminalization of sleep language.
Right, which is what we're looking for.
And we have you know, what you might consider the swing vote plus her follower, Tim Fitzmaurice.
Fitzmaurice, Byers, and Sugar.
Right, and then Michael Schmidt, who now has come over to the way of thinking that, you know, the sleeping ban is just in the way of all progress.
And Ken Cole as well.
And Ken Cole, who's always been against any...
Head of the Homeless Services Center.
Yeah, he recognizes when a law singles out homeless people. And so I think we have a pretty strong chance of coming up with something, Robert. But, you know, we've been down these paths before, all of us.
Well, as I told Mayor Sugar, I would be really pleased.
I told him not to call me if they didn't. You know, April 12th, I left a message to the City Council, don't call me unless you want to talk about decriminalization of sleep language. This is the first call I've got from them.
Right. Well, I'm glad that that's happening, and I think we can credit your good work fasting and our good work protesting.
Right,
and
right.
Who knows
a lot
what
of people,
else.
There's
you
been
know,
a lot of people who've done a lot,
that,
of, lot of work.
Again, the issue, I guess, is to me, you know, is there going to be, to me, I don't see, Byers is the key here. If she is willing to make a change, then there will be a change. If she is not, the only way we can get a change, I think, is to get Sugar to publicly advocate in a way that embarrasses her, and that's something he persistently refuses to do, I think, until we embarrass him into doing it. At least that's been my theory of the whole thing. And it's not a personal matter, in case Mayor Sugar is listening, and he talked to me for the first time in a year and 2 months at any length.
He's not one big one for returning phone calls to anybody, from what I understand, Robert.
Well, he's actually repeatedly, I would have to use the word, and I don't mean to be offensive, but I want to be descriptive, lied about that issue, promised to return phone calls, and then not done so in the most clear way, when he made a specific commitment and then specifically refused. And this has been going on since February of 1999, and I sort of come to expect that he likes to treat me with contempt, and that's the way he proceeds, and I've sort of taken this as part of the political climate. So I found it surprising when 2 days ago he...
Let's talk about Rodkin.
He cornered me for half an hour. Well, I would, you know, Rodkin...
His number's in the book, and he said, call me anytime issue.
But David, is
any
Rodkin
time
relevant?
On any issue.
You know, Rodkin is not really relevant. You think he's about to change his vote? I mean,
no,
on.
He's not about to change his vote, but, you know, the man can derail stuff better than most politicians around.
Will calling him make any difference? I mean,
if you call him on a Monday night all night long before the city council meeting, it just might. Are we conspiring live on the air?
That sounds like a form of a harassment conspiracy.
Conspiring against the democratic system. Well, he doesn't believe in democracy. He's a Stalinist, for God's sake.
Right. Well, you and I do, though, however, and I think we agree I actually have sympathy for the idea that city council members should experience the kind of suffering they're giving other people in a certain way.
Well,
this is the guy we got
from Howard Zinn when he was in town,
Right. The Howard Zinn, the great novelist and the American historian of alternate American history, or real American history, said that people should, that those who pass these kinds of laws should have their own sleep disturbed, and, you know, I would hope they do, based on their consciences, and it seems like they have.
It seems like the first night of our wake-up call, rolling fast for May, early in the morning, I got the call from Keith Sugar's secretary, so... Seems it does have some effect, Robert.
Right. Well, I think to some extent that had to do with that, and plus the fact that he found it rather uncomfortable to find people sitting in his offices. He was coming over complaining rather repeatedly that we were there, and he didn't really. Why weren't we going to leave? And he'd agreed to a meeting. What's wrong? He's going to have a meeting. Why don't we go home? And as I said, a meeting is not what we want. We want you to commit yourself publicly to ending this. We don't think you're going to win on the first vote. We don't think you're going to win on the second vote. But we know that if you start advocating, you're going to win on one of those votes, because it's an issue that everyone has to see basic sense on.
The declaration is, it's been put out, by several of us now from all different angles. You know, this is not business as usual for the city government. The city government is not allowed to operate business as usual. You know, I am a revolutionary. I'm a pacifist revolutionary. You're talking about revolution. You don't see that if there's a revolutionary change. There is a revolution. There's a revolution going on, a pacifist revolution going on worldwide. It includes all kinds of collections of Buddhists and burnout old Marxists and Greens, and there is a pacifist revolution going
leftover
on.
Leftover hippies.
Yeah, leftover hippies, Oracle readers, Gandhi followers.
Tattoo freaks.
And it seems to be with the nuclear situation and with the arms race and with the...
Body-pierced babes.
Yeah, with all the armaments that the other side has and the powers that we have, the pacifist revolution actually is not only the wisest choice for the long-haul change, because there's always backlash when you have a violent revolution, but it also probably seems to be the only one option we've got now.
By the way, I was pleased to see that finally the Sentinel printed a letter from, of all people, Liana Forrest in today's Sentinel commending... commending the sleeping ban protesters, specifically urging them to save your life, because what is your situation, David? Are you medically imperiled?
I'm very weak, Robert. The past couple of days have kind of had me a little worried. I ventured out today kind of happy, and I get high energy, and I'm going to go see the Sufi dancers tonight at Holy Cross and just sort of meditate. Mm-hmm. I'm trying to get more and more into just spiritual mode between now and the meeting Monday morning. Mm-hmm. You know, I fancy myself a bit of a negotiator, but it requires centering. Because you never know what they're going to pull out, You never know what they're going to try to pull.
Well, bring a negotiator with you, because often when you're fasting...
Well, I've made a request that there be a Huff person, a Bernard, included. I haven't got a response.
We may actually send another Huff person, too. I'm not sure yet what the story is with that. And I think the meeting is sort of secondary to whether... We want him to make public advocacy, because I don't... If Catherine Byers changes her mind, well, then there's no problem. If she doesn't change her mind, then Keith is the one who has to change his mind.
I see that as the purpose of the meeting.
Getting her to change her mind.
Yeah, and with Michael Schmidt there, that gives her the license to do that. So I think we have something happening.
Well, I hope that works, because I know when she heard Schmidt's name, she looked at me with a skeptical cock of the eyebrow and said, oh, you mean Michael Schmidt, the individual, or Michael Schmidt, the representative of the area Chamber of Commerce? And I said, the individual. And she said, well, and she turned and went back into her office. But, I mean, I would certainly hope that that could change in the course of the weekend, or certainly it's got to change. And whatever she wants to do is her affair. I think it's the community that's going to move this off the...
Well, you know, Catherine and I have had a love affair for a long, long time.
Oh, wait a minute. Now, hold it.
Ever since 92. And, you know, I love her and she loves me.
Oh,
and,
no.
And so there is an ability, you know, for us to, like, just join hearts and come up with some kind of creative solution. And let's hope...
Well, let's keep this clean, okay, David?
Yeah. Let's hope it's you know, going to be productive for everybody.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's become very, very obvious to everybody except perhaps Chief Belcher, and I don't even really know
Mike
Chief
Vasquez,
Belcher.
I think, is one of your chief opponents now.
Oh, Mike Vasquez, yeah. Well, Mike Vasquez will probably, I think, probably forever be one of my chief opponents.
What a guy, that man.
What a guy. Yeah, like, he really cares.
Mike Vasquez, for those who don't know, is what, he's a downtown merchant, or, I'm not sure, what is actually his position, do you know?
Well, he's invented a new position for himself, a downtown business association, not the downtown association, but downtown business association representative. I think he's invented himself a new title.
Uh-huh.
He's a former president of the Downtown Association.
He's moving from the right to the extreme right, eh?
Yeah, I think that's probably what's really happening.
Interesting.
You know, they become all self-anointed after a while.
Well, I appreciate your call, David.
Sure.
I guess you've announced the concert on June 3rd.
Yeah.
There's the meeting on May 8th.
So you can start buying your tickets tomorrow, folks. And the more advanced tickets we have, the more we cut down our overhead. It's a kind of a phenomenon about you know, when you have your expenses paid up front, you end up having more profit because of, you know, the union scale, everything, you know, if the more you have in place, the more you have paid for, the more profit you have, and that means the more goes to actually establishing the safe zones. This money is going to go to the security guards, to the social workers, everything that's needed for safe sleeping zones. And we're going to do this about three times before the election.
Also, people can come, I guess, tomorrow between 3 and 5 and perhaps om with you.
Perhaps.
For those who are omless, so
well,
to speak.
I'm more a Namiho Rengekyo.
There you go.
Well,
I can do that.
I'm a Omwa Dudiwada.
There you go. Tomorrow at City Council 809 Center, I'd also like to announce that in the morning, India Joe will be providing some nice, hot, yummy soup.
Yeah, I'm sorry I didn't arrange for coffee and donuts this morning, Robert. I just had too much on my plate, and I went into Tuesday night, I think I went into a weakness kind of phase, and I just didn't.
Well, we'll expect coffee and donuts Monday morning for the meeting for those of us who get locked out of a supposedly...
Right now I'm just working on coffee and donuts for church day. We're having church day for the petition drive. Anybody wants to volunteer to be in front of a church May 21st, that's church day. We've got Holy Cross covered, we've got Unity covered, but we need the other churches covered, so... do call that Green Party number, 425-4499.
And is that the number to call also for those who want to join the fast?
For petitions. No, to call the fast, to join the fast, they call me.
All right, and if you have general questions about how to help the sleeping ban campaign, and we're not out yet, I got to tell you, I think we're actually just going through a variety of tactics, which I think are very interesting.
Yeah.
We have a city council meeting on Tuesday. You have any information on that one, David?
I have nothing yet. What is this? This is Thursday. We should have it online now. Shouldn't we be able to go online tonight and see it?
Possibly, although yeah. I think the agenda goes out tomorrow at 10, according to Leslie Cook.
Okay.
Actually, the agenda went out to the city council today. It goes out to us tomorrow.
I was told that the agenda gets done on Wednesday now.
Correct. That's what I hear, too.
Yeah. Okay, Robert, keep up the good work. Peace. Let's not let each other's confusions attack each other.
Certainly not. And give
Adios.
Me a call if you want to get together.
Okay.
All right.
Bye.
And that was that man with nothing in his belly but lots in his heart, David Silva. This is Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3 FM. And I was about to give you a reprise of Life on Pacific Avenue when they were... I guess it's around the day when Ali Baba, the merchant who runs Ali Baba's kiosk in front of the Bank of America Instateller at Lincoln and Pacific, down near New Leaf Market, was taking a lot of animus toward folks chalking on the sidewalk, chalking slogans about ending the sleeping ban, and he swore out a variety of tickets against younger people, and in response, they swore out tickets against him. We've played some of that tape. Let's play some more of it.
Four tickets, one individual.
Now, have any other people suffered tickets from him today as a consequence that you're aware of?
Absolutely. He has witnessed probably 50 people riding on the sidewalk, and I, to my knowledge, am the only guy who got a ticket.
I guess James.
I didn't even touch a piece of chalk, so go ask me.
I guess James also. Oh, really? You didn't even get it. You didn't even touch the
chalk. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. What's up?
All right. Right on. Oh yeah. The new pot deal. What's up with that?
So it seems that now a Scarecrow, as some call him, have given Alibaba a ticket. Alibaba didn't want to talk to me, and I couldn't get an account from him, and as you heard, I became somewhat adversarial in the way I spoke. So could be I'm not getting any more free falafels. Not that I ever did, my dear. So we have another tale from the lips of Dirty Dave. Hey, Dave, go ahead.
Yes. It seems like the Santa Cruz PD sure likes to harass people that sleep in this town. Like Mike Tomase, I'll say, because he's been here since 1961. He's a Vietnam vet. When he got back into this country, the people were throwing tomatoes and eggs at him, calling him a baby raper and baby killer and on and on. But he lives here. His aunt lived here. He grew up here. He came back here. He lives in his RV out on West Cliff Drive. The police ticketed him for camping illegally.
It's John Woolfolk. John, come on over.
Why?
Of the Mercury News.
Oh, the reason why is because there is a man named Eric.
Hold up on the story for a minute. We have a Mercury News reporter here, eager to write a front page story.
Well, what you got going here?
It's the sleeping band table. We're having a protest.
Start a riot.
Protest coming up here on April 11th. But the most recent.
Is that when they're taking it up on the?
They're not taking it up. They're. They have the Homeless Issues Task Force's report, which may or may not have anything to do with it.
Uh-huh.
They probably won't take it up. We will be the ones who will take it up, just uh-huh. like at the last council meeting, which you probably read about in the Sentinel.
Right.
We didn't stop the meeting. We said
down in front of the council.
Right. We had about 25 or 30 people in front of the council.
Right now, that even though I was laying on the floor, as they say, I stopped council. Did not. Living wage had no problem. Stated so. No problem stepping over the bodies. We made room at the podium. He approached the podium, he stood at the podium, and he stated to Mayor Sugar, "I'm ready to present. Let's proceed." Mayor Sugar at that time, and I quote, stated, "I will not sit here while people lay on my floor," and adjourned the meeting and stormed out. It's at that point that Mike Rotkin called us the fascists. Okay? The Sentinel statements are absolute lies. There's videotape of it. He was not heckled. It was not before the start of the protest, if you read the Sentinel article.
Yeah, I did.
Okay, it stated, before the protest, after heckling, well, there's videotape, was on the news.
Come on over.
Protest started with me wrapping in my blanket and laying down. There was no heckling.
Uh-huh.
At that point, Mike Rotkin stated,
and actually what's going on?
Anyone who interrupts a democratic meeting by a duly elected body is a fascist.
Yeah,
So they ticketed me for putting political statements in chalk on the sidewalks, which is protected by my First Amendment right.
You can't sign unless you're a registered city voter.
Okay? You understand the First Amendment free speech? There's also political free speech as upheld by the United States Supreme Court, that chalking on a city sidewalk, political slogans, is protected under the First Amendment. Okay. The officers also say if I do it again, they're going to arrest me. So if you feel like being here tomorrow at noon, there's a very good chance I'm going to jail at noon.
Because
I'm going to again chalk on the sidewalks tomorrow at noon. And that will be within the 48 hours.
This is a list.
So Robert, what's happening next?
Well, I came down here today because I heard that apparently a number of irate merchants didn't like the chalk on the sidewalk. And it sounds like a trivial...
Yeah, I do that all the time.
Yeah, it is. And it's washable. It comes off. And it actually was the basis for a $20,000 lawsuit up in Berkeley when they arrested a guy up there named Christopher... Last name escapes me. Anyway, so James may go to jail on that. But actually what's happening here is it's a new ban, kind of a push to decriminalize sleeping, because as of April 1st, two days ago, they don't have legal places anymore, even at the Armory, for the 20%. We're with Cassandra Fox, who's a woman who speeds around town in her wheelchair. She's got a great hat which says, "I'm a shameless agitator, no nukes, and I'm too young to be this old." Cassandra, you wrote a letter about the sleeping ban to the Sentinel and gave it to them about a week ago?
Yeah, I did.
And I know that they printed one of your letters about a year and a half ago, a year ago.
Say that again?
They printed one of your letters about a year ago.
Yeah, they've always printed every one I've ever given them.
And do they usually print it within a week after the time you sent it to them?
Yes, they do.
And you notice that this time they haven't?
No, they haven't.
Well, if they don't print it in the next few days, then I would have to suggest, because we've been having this concern too, that there may be a censorship factor here.
Oh, that's an awful thing to think of. Yeah, I don't like to think of that. I may go back and I don't know who the person is in charge of them, but...
Yeah, definitely should ask them what the hell is going on.
What does your shirt say?
And Cassandra Fox, she tools around town in her electric wheelchair. She's in her 80s and has been a supporter of Sleeping Ban Repeal for a number of years. She's been actually helped us put out flyers and letters to city council. I particularly want to give her a tip of the hat. Thanks, Cassandra. And her letter did appear in the Sentinel. It actually, I didn't recognize it when I first saw it because it doesn't...
One of the number one ways that people overdose is after they leave jail or prison. They go back and they do the same amount of drugs that they did before, and it's too much for their bodies to handle. And if our prison system would just release a two-sentence statement to people getting out, I bet they could save lives.
And have you suggested this to the prison authorities or the jail authorities?
Oh, I don't suggest anything to them because they have told me in many ways that they do not like me because I'm a social worker.
Perhaps you should have an anonymous, an intermediary who makes these kinds of suggestions, since you yourself, knowledgeable, are, like certain other people in the community, not as well regarded as you should be.
No, thank you. Maybe Huff should get involved.
Huff, of course, is loved by the jail authorities. We would probably have a strong influence on all the jailers. I think maybe Cynthia Matthews should step forward.
Oh, yes. Well, Cynthia should do a lot of things for this town that she is failing to do, but she doesn't serve us all, only the rich.
Cynthia is a Planned Parenthood woman. She would tell you that that's certainly not true, that she helps the poor person every so often.
Well, yeah, helping one person every so
often. Odd to be helping those poor people.
In this town it is. Very odd.
Kind of aggressive behavior by a woman on the mall. Maybe I should call the police here.
Yes.
So, anything you've noticed in the last couple of weeks you want to pass on to the general community on listening to free radio that you couldn't do in your own show?
Anything that I've noticed, like, going on in town? Well, summer crew is definitely here. We got a lot of new folks, and they're going to get caught up in the police sweeps when the police are attempting to make our town look all nice and pretty for all the people coming to spend money.
Are the police sweeping more? I've heard a lot about vehicles being taken and things of that sort. Have you heard any tales of this?
I haven't heard of any mass arrests yet, but I have seen a lot of police driving real slow up and down the mall, encouraging people to move along.
Roman, 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 keep those homeless Roman. Roman, 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 go hide. Don't try and house and feed 'em, just jail rob and beat 'em. Drive 'em back into the night.
That's very lovely.
Signed copies of these songs can be got by sending $10 to this radio station.
All right, well, I am off after working my long day.
I'm off as well.
Well, yes.
When is your show, for those who don't know?
My show is Fridays, 11 to 1. All music to take a break from the hard work we do in activism all week long.
Music is your heroine, I can see that.
It certainly is.
Thank you, Stephanie.
Thank you.
Well, let's go.
With me today is Mary Curry here at 7:30 in front of the Juice World, the new location of the Sleeping Ban Repeal table. Mary, what's happening?
Well, I haven't been able to sleep with the church group. They banned me.
When did this happen?
Ken Cole banned me, and he takes orders from Fitzmaurice. Yeah, that's right. And I went to see Fitzmaurice three times after the other time.
Right.
This is ridiculous. His wife was there yesterday. She said, he's not here. Okay, so I went back today. Because they wouldn't let me in the...
Interfaith Satellite Shelter Program?
Yeah, the satellite...
Did they give a reason for banning you?
No. They just said, you can't stay... I says, how about the 4 days I haven't been coming?
Mm-hmm.
Well, you can come back Friday. Three of them said. Three. Ken Cole, the guy that works with them in the office... And that lesbian, that short lesbian that works in the office next to him, she looks like a butcher from the word go.
So where are you sleeping tonight, Mary? For those eligible men or women who wish you
to get in touch. She'll never give me a place.
Where did you sleep last night? Let me ask you.
Where? I didn't.
You stayed awake?
Yeah.
Wow.
And it was cold at 4 or 5 o'clock. I was freezing. I couldn't sleep anywhere. I didn't know what to do. I felt.
Before they leave, let me grab it. Hang on. It's on Proposition 21 and how young people are being treated by the police these days from this group now signing the sleeping ban petition. What about you? You look a little embarrassed to say it. What about you, sir? Let me put it this way. Are people being treated properly? Is there any problem?
I don't see a problem in it, but I don't know enough about it.
Gotcha. And I see you're signing this petition to end the sleeping ban. Why is that?
Because I think people should be allowed to sleep where they're going to. It's not like they're hurting anyone. I don't know.
You two have signed this petition. What's your view?
Exact same thing. Why shouldn't they be allowed to sleep? We all need sleep.
We all need sleep. And your thought on this?
Basically the same. If they don't have a place to sleep, then we should give them a place to sleep.
Thank you very much. Go ahead, Mary. Sorry I had to take that brief.
I don't know what to do tonight. I don't have a place either. And I went over to Tim Fitzmaurice's place. They just came. I waited for them. They both came from the university where they both work.
Who's they? Tim and his wife?
Yeah. And she went and called. I don't know if she called who she talked to on the phone. And he says, "This is ridiculous. Call me at my
office?
Yeah, downtown there.
City Hall?
Yeah, the City Hall. He says, I can't be working overtime every night. He thinks I don't know that he was at the meeting last night. What did they call
City
it?
Council.
City Council meeting. You know? Because the woman next door told me he was at the city.
So did he offer you a legal place to sleep?
No.
Did he tell you to get lost?
In other words, he said get lost. And no, not exactly get lost, but that's what he meant. See?
Tim Fitzmaurice, our council member, told a 74-year-old, forgive me.
Wait a minute.
Told you to get lost.
Yeah, I saw the mayor.
Mayor Keith Sugar.
Yeah, at the New Leaf. On off of Mission Street, I says, "Hi, Keith." He said, "How's things?" I says, "No good." I says, "I don't have a place to stay." I says, "Do you know of a place?" He says, "Oh, that's no good." I says, "Well, do you know of a place where I could stay?" He says, "No."
An honest man. What about his house? Of course, I'm not inviting you to my house, so I don't know what.
So I don't know what to do tonight. I mean, you know.
I'm sure.
Drew?
Andrew, you got a ticket for...
No. Being out of the hash marks, which, by the way, I was within.
In what respect? I'm sorry, what are you speaking of?
I was parked in parallel with the curb
right.
At Lighthouse up there, you know, on West Coast there. And I was repeatedly, my home was repeatedly pounded on with a nightstick for, I'd say, various times within probably an hour.
And when was this?
This was today on the 30th. 30th
of March,
2000.
That would have been on Thursday evening?
2:30, 3:30 in the morning or so. Mm-hmm. I was eventually given a ticket for my home was, apparently according to the ticket, was outside of these white hash marks.
Didn't give you a ticket for sleeping, but they gave you a ticket for inappropriate parking behavior.
Uh-huh. Which, by the way, was appropriate, because I was within the hash marks.
Right.
But just out of harassment, which is, it was nothing less than that, and it was fully harassment and violation.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I was given a $24, that's what they had to resort to, was a ticket like
that. How many cops were involved in this?
I myself only saw one.
You know the name of the officer?
No, I don't. Oh, it's not a ticket, though. Citation.
Citation. Do you have that citation with you?
Not on my person. In my home, it is.
How long have you lived in Santa Cruz?
A couple months.
And have you been hassled before for any of this stuff?
No.
And have you been parked pretty much in the same area?
I try and change here and there, you know. Like, I don't...
You don't
I'm respectful of all, you know. I don't, you know.
Any objection by playing this on free radio?
No, not at all. Please do.
So what did you do the next night? Because that was several nights ago.
And that's not a park the same place.
but the
last couple nights I haven't parked there because I went out of town. But
you're back. You weren't harassed the next night.
No.
So it was sort of a one night sort of spoiling.
Let's clean them out of here. Let's clean them out of here. Mm-hmm. And get, and by the way, they did only harass the houseless people. I didn't see them because after I realized I was written a ticket, I sat up and watched the actions and they didn't knock on one surfer's door.
And how do we know it was a surfer door as distinguished from a non-surfer?
Because I've seen them. I've seen surfers and I know where
how many surfers were parked up there? How many vehicles of surfers?
Four or five maybe.
And so some vehicles are distinctively surfer vehicles based on, not you and I wouldn't know, but let's say if you knew the people you would know. Or
yeah, and that's the only way I knew.
Right.
You know, but like I didn't hear or see of them bothering any surfer. But I certainly saw knock on every...
So they bothered the surfs, but not the surfers.
Yeah.
Anything else?
No.
We're talking to
Steve Hibbett.
Steve, you recently came from a rather notorious place, and you're carrying your art with you.
Yeah, I just got released this morning. This is artifacts that I made out of pure toilet paper and cardboard.
And you did this because the place you were living did not allow the use of usual art materials.
In fact, they confiscated this stuff from me 2 weeks before I got out, and some of it got ruined because they called it contraband. Any cardboard or toilet paper that I use, they automatically say it's state property, so they tried to take my art away from me.
And what was the name of this place where you were living?
San Quentin State Prison.
I got you. And you've been there for how long?
Well, I did a total year, but I was here in Santa Cruz fighting a case for about 6 months, so I did only 6 months there, but I did a total year, actually 366 days, because this year's a leap year, so.
I have to ask you the obvious. What were you in jail for?
Well, originally, back in 93, when I was a drinker, I drove my third time, got my third DUI. So, and they gave me a prison sentence for it. I did 16 months. Then I was out on parole for a three-year stench, and they enhance it 1 year if you mess up. And the first year I was all right. The second year I shot up to Washington, which I wasn't supposed to go, for my brother's wedding, and I ended up staying up there for 3 years. So I absconded for 3 years, basically. And I, you know, they got me for that. And, you know, they stick you, you get the smallest violation, they'll stick you back in. So
you have with you, and I see these are a number of you got two large clear plastic bags with some cardboard boxes inside. You have some artwork.
Oh, yeah. This one right here. It's a really special kind of thing. It's a merry-go-round. It's all the cardboard and toilet paper. Like I say, the horses themselves are cut out of styrofoam. And I built it where each horse has its own individual wheel. And as you turn it, each horse goes up and down just like a regular merry-go-round. And it's something to look at, you know, being that it's out of toilet paper. I mean, it came out beautiful. Mm-hmm. And I've been told by somebody who works the internet that I can get like $1,500, $2,000 for it, because for one, it's from a state prison, and state prison art is a lot, worth a lot of money in the public's eye. Two, it comes from San Quentin, and San Quentin is worldwide known. It's death row. Three is that this one particular piece, it's called Memories of a Child. The reason why, let's say I was originally building it for my daughter, she's 13 years old, but I dedicated it to a young lady, she was 11 years old, her name is Annette Selick, and she was brutally raped and murdered by a gentleman who was in there. This was back in 1978, I believe, and he raped and murdered her. I mean, he raped her first, and then he threw her off of a 105-foot bridge alive. She had time to curl up underneath the bridge, and then she died. And I really had thoughts about her, so I dedicated this to her. And I actually have a dedication paper I wrote out saying who Gerald was. He was just put the lethal injection on March 15th, and I finished this piece on March 14th. So, you know, and the other box I have other things like I made an old 1915 locomobile car, and I got a 1910 car in there. I got a really nice locomotive, you know. All pretty much worth money, but it was all built in San Quentin.
But at the moment, you have no home yourself.
Absolutely none. Absolutely none.
And in fact, you just hit town today? Or?
I just got off the Greyhound bus. I was just looking for an art store, an art gallery, to find out if they would want to even show it, you know, in town, which would also help me out because I don't have any money at the moment. My parole officer's not going to be in for another day or two, so
and you don't want to be arrested for sleeping after 11
exactly,
o'clock at
exactly.
night.
Exactly, and I can't carry this hard work around, so I was hoping I'd find somebody. Maybe they'll show it. If not, then I'm stuck. I'll have to take it. And at the moment, I don't have a tent. I don't have a sleeping bag. I don't have nothing right now.
And if you did, of course, it would still be a $54 fine to sleep after 11 o'clock at night. Though, frankly, they rarely fine people. I mean, they can't arrest everybody, and they can't ticket everybody, and they don't.
Right.
It doesn't happen that regularly or that often, but it is a constant, it's a source of apprehension.
Right.
For people.
Now, when I was in San Quentin, I saw that came over the news that Santa Cruz is trying to open up a parking lot, where people can sleep in their cars, but that doesn't help a person out like me.
Right.
I still got to sleep somewhere, if I went to one of the parks, one of the state parks, if there's room, you pay like $14 a day, but that gets kind of expensive when you don't have any money or a sleeping bag or a tent really right now. A camping ground should be, Santa Cruz needs it for the homeless, we need something here.
Sure, no question about it.
There's been times where I've gone and taken my tent and I've just found some, one thing about Santa Cruz and Aptos and what have you, you're closer to more of a wilderness type thing unless you're right directly in town, so. I find the side of a hill and I throw up camp there, but if a cop walked up on me, especially me being on parole, I go straight back to jail. And if they want to violate me, then I go straight back to prison. And I sit there until they release me again and I start all over square one.
It's an endless cycle.
Endless.
We have two hardcore criminals from San Diego. Your name?
Michael.
And you're?
Lorena.
And you sleep in a vehicle or outside or what's the story?
Oh, I slept outside last night. I'll probably sleep outside again tonight.
And are you aware that you're violating the Santa Cruz City sleeping ban if you're within the city limits?
I wasn't aware of that, but now I am. It's ridiculous.
Wait a minute. Don't you respect the law in our community, for heaven's sake?
Not a ridiculous law like that.
Take it. Have you been traveling, for a while? What are your...
We're just doing a program at Sierra Institute at UC Santa Cruz, and we just traveled out from San Diego, but we didn't have a place to stay, so we thought we'd just sleep outside.
Typical. Flagrant youth, irresponsible felons wandering the streets. Officer?
I don't want to put it on that. All right, man.
You'd never guess, but once upon a time, this land of ours
was sick, infirm, and doddering, robbed of all its powers.
People lay in bed all day, only arose to collect their pay.
Life for them was just a bowl of flowers.
They bred like rabbits, coupling day and night. Claimed the child allowance as their right. Fell sick of diseases of all descriptions just to collect the free prescriptions. Often broke a limb just out of spite. Eye and dental treatment, they were free. Part of the welfare state's conspiracy. Cheap housing and cheap transport, they were tricks to lead us all astray and see life as an endless holiday. The poor were disaffected with ideas above their station,
like jobs for all and free school meals, a decent education.
The writing, it was on the wall, then was heard the clarion call,
and Finchley's queen rode over the horizon. I hope to God, she cried, I'm not too late to perform a miracle and set things straight, to fight the good fight and raise the flag for a new society of grab and fashion the modern cost-effective state. She kneed the unions in the crutch with scorn, saying I mean to do what I have sworn. Shatter the night with fractured bowels, gripped and twisted the nation's bowels, and the economic miracle was born. And then the January bumper sale was organized,
and patriotic spivs and multinationals were advised
that the country was up for grabs, and so whoever turned up with a pile of dough would get a chunk of Britain as the prize. She stood behind the counter full of zeal, sold telephones, Rolls-Royce and British Steel. She sold what wasn't hers to sell, like British Airways gas as well, and threw in North Sea oil to clinch the deal.
When she talks of future plans, she waxes lyrical,
while some of the rest of us become hysterical.
Water, DHSS, and coal mines are in the privatization pipeline, along with railways, the army, prisons, royal ordnance, the electricity system, education, etc., etc., and even perhaps the air we breathe. And this is the lady's economic miracle.
Okay, it's about 5:30 on April 3rd, 2000. We're heading over to the sleeping ban repeal table. The report that Mayor Keith Sugar has been seen going in and out of shops nearby. Got a call from Jerry Henry. Well, it looks like Mayor Sugar is chatting with James Ney. And John, you're doing some chalking on the sidewalk. Now, wait a minute. Isn't this an illegal behavior on your part, a green and the sleeping ban? And, hi, have you decided to volunteer to sign up? So we have a special guest here at the table tonight, folks. The mayor of Santa Cruz is here. Anybody wants a legal place to sleep, they should talk to the mayor. He's right here. He can perhaps direct them to an appropriate place.
Is this my pen or your pen?
It looks like it's yours because it's not chewed.
Oh, okay.
This fellow there with in green, he's... That's the one. Yeah. No, just walk up. He's friendly. He'll say hello to you. It's no problem. But that's my view.
Do you know about HCRC?
Huh?
On Coral Street?
Yeah, but he didn't want to go into the shelter tonight.
I don't like the shelters. I'm very tired about shelters during the before. I don't like them.
Yeah.
The thing is, where else can I sleep?
Well, I'd be happy to help you out, but you've got to ask him to turn his microphone off first.
He doesn't like to be quoted publicly. But if he's going to help you out, he can help you out with the microphone on. Believe me, he can. He has the power to do it either way.
Sorry. Mm. I'll be happy to talk with you if you can turn that on.
Yeah. So basically what you're saying is you're chicken shit to even talk to the homeless with a microphone?
Apparently so. Thank you, Keith. Mayor Sugar is leaving, afraid again of the microphone. There's your mayor, Mayor Santa Cruz, the man who will not put the sleeping ban on the agenda. He's leaving, and he will not talk to homeless people in front of a microphone.
Mayor Sugar is too chicken shit to know about the fucking truth.
You've offended our mayor.
It's lost. Mayor Sugar, come back. We won't hurt you, Mayor Sugar.
We won't fight. We're only evil.
Come on, Mayor Sugar. Don't be afraid. We're here. Don't be afraid. Don't be too afraid to talk to homeless people. It's okay. Come on back, Mayor Sugar.
And I know I played that bit before on Free Radio. That was Mayor Sugar turning away from a relatively straightforward question about where a six-month pregnant homeless mom could find a place. And because it was being recorded, he refused to speak to her and walked away. What I noticed about that conversation, what I've commented on to people later, is that the couple from whom he walked away did not blame me. They did not move off to talk to Sugar privately in another place, more quietly. They did not separate themselves, but they maintained solidarity with the table and with the protesters out there. They maintained the solidarity of saying to the mayor, you've got to say one thing in one place to all people. You can't talk out of both sides of your face in different parts of town. You can't say one thing to one person privately and then say something else to somebody else privately. You've got to be able to be quoted publicly on the record. And the mayor didn't want to do that, so he walked away. But that's fine, because in so doing, he shows his colors on this matter. And hopefully he will eventually acquire the purpose, single-mindedness, and courage to be able to speak publicly on this issue, or at least, if he can't do that, we'll find somebody else and to put in his place who can. I want to contrast this with certain other homeless activists who decide to meet with the mayor in situations where some of us are excluded. I think that it's interesting how a homeless couple can come to a decision that they are in solidarity with everyone, whereas more sophisticated activists can make choices to do otherwise. I know this happened back in 1990 and 1996 with activist Sherry Connable, who actually made it an art to meet with high-ranking public officials with other homeless activists excluded. And it was, I think, disastrous. And whenever I see that happening, I try to comment on it. And I try to do so to some extent tactfully, because I recognize that people have different strategies and different approaches. But I really think all the homeless activists have to get together. They have to confer with each other before they agree on meetings with public officials that specifically exclude some of us. Apropos of which is the May 8th meeting of the mayor with certain activists and certain individuals in the homeless community. That's, of course, his meeting, and that's fine. And I, as I said in conversations with David Silva, who will be at that meeting, I hope something productive comes of it. One of the conditions of that meeting that he had made, although he seemed to be waffling on it later, was that other activists, that myself and Becky Johnson be barred from that public meeting, from that meeting, which I say public meeting because there are three council members meeting, and to me that means a Brown Act. It means that to some extent it is a public meeting. He can't keep out the public if they show up. So I admit I have some ambivalence about the whole situation, and I'm pleased that to some extent we're provoking Mayor Sugar into some meetings, but I note that the main thing, as I told the activist David Silva when he called in and talked about the upcoming concert, is not that Mayor Sugar has agreed to yet another meeting. I mean, Mayor Sugar will hold a meeting a week if it can avoid him having to do anything, or if it will cut down on the public embarrassment that he will suffer when people start showing up at his office and start setting up a tent city at City Hall, which they haven't done yet, but I'm ever hopeful people will begin to do, perhaps a little too hopeful, because the folks have talked about it at the Homeless Services Center. They haven't done anything. We do have another city council meeting coming up on the next Tuesday, and a council meeting devoid of anything around the sleeping ban. Not a word, not a peep. Instead, there's a meeting of Sugar is having his meeting on Monday. Too late to put anything on the agenda. And of course, all he has to do is put on the agenda something around the sleeping ban this week. If it gets voted down and something new comes out of this meeting, he can bring it up again. And it's not like one thing precludes the other. But no, instead of taking meaningful action that homeless activists are taking, Sugar is holding another meeting. And what I'm going to suggest to folks is that they show up in large numbers, either inside or outside that meeting, and actually at other times too, whenever the mayor appears in public places, and simply put the question to him loudly and clearly, why aren't you putting the sleeping ban on the agenda? And please don't tell me you don't have the votes. I want you to advocate for this issue, period, because it's a moral issue, because it needs to be advocated for. And that's what I'm suggesting everyone out there do. You can always call City Council, and I encourage people to do that. 420-5017 is the phone number. You can call them right now. It's a 24-hour message line. Leave them a message telling them to get off the dime. But I'll give you an idea of how much attention they pay to those calls. I talked to Mayor Sugar, as I said, for the first time in about a year and, 14 months, let's say. That's about right. And actually, we didn't have much of a conversation. It's actually about the first time in 16 or 17 months. And I said to him, he said, you know, after all those protests, we got negative calls about the sleeping ban. I said, how many was that? He said, oh, well, we got 8. This was after presumably the pie demonstrations and the sleep-in at City Council. And I said, well, what about David Silva's calls and the calls from the sleeping ban faster? He said, oh, I'm not counting those. A message, he's not counting those. So I'm really glad that people are continuing to do this, and I hope that at some point, because I'm noticing letters starting to appear in the paper and on the Good Times and today's Sentinel, as I mentioned, from Liana Forrest about the sleeping ban, but I think the heat needs to be turned up. Another thing I'll mention to you is we had a small protest at it was called a Land Use Consultant Forum that was up at Holy Cross Church. It was a week ago, actually, today, more or less. And they had, from 3 to 6 in the afternoon, they had a bunch of consultants talking to a bunch of merchants and a couple of city council members, Sugar and Crone and Fitzmaurice, and a bunch of staffers, those $100,000 staffers we love so much, paid by the city with your money. And they talked about, the business climate downtown and so forth. And we had a number of people, homeless people and homeless activists with signs. Bernard Klitzner stood actually right behind the speakers with a sign about ending the sleeping ban. Becky Johnson stood up there bravely and strongly. And we kept a very, actually, low-profile presence other than visually. Visually, we were very high-profile, but we didn't interrupt the proceedings. We didn't chant. We didn't sing. And afterward, I realized that that's exactly what we should have done. And the reason I realized that was because Eileen Fogarty, who's always been polite and nice to me, she's one of those $100,000 consultants, came up to me, not consultant, staff members for the redevelopment agency. She came up to me yesterday in city council offices where I was sitting with my sign and the sleeping ban and the waiting for sugar protest, which has been going on all week and presumably will go on all next week if we can keep it going, and said, Robert, thank you very much for not causing a disruption. I think everybody really respected that. And the fact of the matter was, they respected it so much they didn't mention homelessness once. They didn't talk about land use for homelessness at all. She said, you know, if you disrupted it, they planned to actually give you 15 minutes, but I think we really respected you for not doing that. Well, do we want respect or do we want action? I guess that's the question. We got an incoming call here. Hi, you're on Free Radio.
Hi, Robert. Me and, you know, Scott are over at, we're just over 123 Sycamore.
125?
We think it's 123.
Uh-huh.
125, I'm sorry. And yes, there's no meeting there. There's nobody there.
Okay, you're on Free Radio, Bernard.
Well, okay.
I want to tell you that actually it's interesting. You're the second person to call in, and Bernard, what you're talking about is the meeting of the Mercy Charities Housing Hoax Dolphin Lee Demolition Project. That's the project that's going to evict 200 to 400 Hispanic families in the name of affordable housing. They're going to destroy their houses in order to, quote, build affordable housing, which many, if not most of them, won't be able to get back into for different reasons. So what's happened, what we were told today at a meeting of the so-called Relocation Committee 2 or 3 days ago, mm-hmm. was that there was a meeting of the Advisory Committee to the Mercy Charities Housing, which is the project that's both building this and is also going to be running it. And we were told it was going to be 6 o'clock tonight at 125 Sycamore. Now, you went down there.
Well, I got there at around 20 to 7 now, so I can't. Maybe it was a quick meeting, but...
No, it wasn't a quick meeting because Becky Johnson was there at about 6 o'clock mm-hmm. trying to give out flyers. Nobody was there. Now, what this means is that the folks at the redevelopment agency that were giving out this information to the people were either misinforming them consciously or just incompetently or perhaps genuinely mistaken, let's be nice, although 4 days before the meeting, it's strange they don't know where the meeting is or they're giving the wrong address.
Well,
let me finish. Or else they were changing the location of the meeting once they understood that there might be other people coming and trying to come to it. Because I know that Becky called some of the advisory committee board members today and said, look, you should know what's going on. You should admit a delegation of the Dolphin and Lee tenants to talk to you.
It's an open meeting, Robert. I have it under the city council meeting agenda minutes, January 25, 2003 o'clock, session number 16. And it says that these are going to conduct public meetings in compliance with the Brown Act.
Then they're violating the Brown Act.
Yes, they are. And we're just going to get on their ass. Man, that makes me really pissed. You know, if they're open. I'm going to let you talk to Scott a little bit.
Sure.
I'll put him on. Mm-hmm. Hold on, Robert.
Thanks, Bernard.
Welcome. Hey, Robert.
Scott Graham, aren't you that barefoot nemesis of the city council?
I believe so.
How are you?
All right. Well, I dug up the action agenda for the January 25th meeting.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know, you were at that meeting, but remember how there was an item 16 on the 3 o'clock session, and on the redevelopment session, they had another item that was the relocation committee, and they kind of combined them both together
mm-hmm.
and only gave us 3 minutes and tried to make us not talk about things we wanted to talk about.
Mm-hmm. Remember?
But anyway, on item 16, it says... Council requests that staff come back with a working plan regarding the relocation committee in order that the council to have a clear understanding of its relationship with the Mercy Charities Advisory Body. To request the advisory committee be proposed by Mercy Charities Housing, conduct public meetings in compliance with the Brown Act, with regularly scheduled and advertised meetings in English and Spanish, and that the committee's findings be submitted to the redevelopment agency and to staff.
Wow. It's interesting, Scott, because you may remember 3 days ago at the relocation committee meeting in the community trailer in a session, I guess, run by the La Familia head, a woman who heads that committee, and interpreted by Veronica Lopez, now a paid redevelopment agency agent, I would have to call her, an employee. It was stated that they didn't know if this meeting was open or not, and then Elizabeth Vogel told me yesterday that she had specifically stated clearly enough and loudly enough that it was closed. Did you hear anyone say one way or the other what this meeting was, this forthcoming meeting that today you went to and found no trace of, the advisory board of the Mercy Charities housing project?
They decided not to hold the meeting until they can talk to John Bear or somebody to find out if they need to have a closed meeting or not.
Well, I know that when I tried, Elizabeth Vogel and I had a phone interview planned for 2 o'clock today, and she canceled that abruptly without giving me a 15-minute notice, although we had specifically set it up the day before, and I canceled a trip to San Francisco in order to be on the phone with her and ask her a number of questions about the Mercy Charities housing project. So one of those questions, of course, had to do with this advisory board meeting and whether it was open or closed and how she could justify it, given what you had earlier told me and now are substantiating, that the Mercy Charities Housing Advisory Board, the board that advises this $12 million affordable housing quote-unquote project, the demolition of the Dolphin Lee.
Well, they officially call it the Project Advisory Committee.
Okay, the Project Advisory Committee. This is distinguished, of course, from a Project Area Committee, which Phil Baer is suing to get established.
Right. Well, that's one of the points of his lawsuit. He's got many points in his lawsuit, but that's one of the primary ones.
A lot of this is technical for folks who don't understand the issue. Can you cut to the chase in this? What's really going on here, Scott?
Well, what's really going on is that the city council is going against basically what the three newest members ran on was an open public process. And instead of allowing the residents in this neighborhood that are going to be most affected by this project get in on the ground floor, plan, design, decide the site, where it's going to be built, all these kind of issues, the city is coming with a prepackaged plan and then saying, well, you can help us decide how we're going to relocate you. And then when and if you come back, we'll let you decide what color we're going to paint the building.
And apparently they're keeping these meetings behind closed doors, I think to some extent because, for example, I prepared a flyer today to be distributed to that. I helped prepare a flyer. The main work was done by Becky Johnson. She prepared this flyer which asked a great number of questions of this Mercy Charities Advisory Board. Did you know that? And perhaps if she's listening, and she may be, since she often monitors this show, she can call in and read us the questions that she would have asked this advisory board were they aware of these facts. Because I think that a lot of people are getting roped into this whole thing without really understanding the bottom line.
Right. I mean, basically, people are buying this nicely packaged deal that they have. Oh, we're just going to help some poor people by building them better housing. Well, then if these are the people that are currently living there, are the people that they're going to help, first of all, you have to listen to them. You have to allow them to be involved in the planning process right from the very beginning. You don't stick them in somewhere in the middle of the process and say, okay, now you can come in and tell us what to do and or give us advice on what we should do. It's more what they're asking now. But
definitely.
And it's just, you know, the whole thing has been a total whitewash. I mean, they're saying, oh, we're trying to do good. But then when push comes to shove, they won't, by ordinance, guarantee that all people that currently reside there will be able to move back into the new place. Because they know that there's too many extenuating circumstances, like federal laws, that will prevent that from happening. And so they're basically lying to the current residents, telling them, oh, yes, we're going to give you first preference and all this kind of stuff, when they know that that's all BS.
Well, I know that when at this meeting 3 days ago, the Relocation Committee meeting, which was noticed at City Hall, but I guess this one, did we found the Advisory Committee Board meeting noticed? I didn't find it when I looked earlier today, but maybe I didn't look carefully enough.
I didn't look.
You know, I guess we can look later and see what's going on, but what they said at this meeting, after the meeting, I went up to Vice Mayor Tim Fitzmaurice, who is the main booster of this project, and said, Tim, are you prepared to sign a letter that guarantees that you will bring to City Council and vote in favor of relocation money for every person who's displaced and a guaranteed return for every person who's displaced by this Mercy Charity's bulldozing project. And he just said, I'm not going to talk to you. He wouldn't answer the question. I followed him around the room saying, Tim, aren't you going to sign the guarantees? And Tim, of course, had nothing to say. He was ducking here. He was ducking there. He finally ducked out, shaking his head. I guess he ran into you as he walked out.
Right.
And the same thing was true with Councilmember Hernandez. You know, he just kept saying, oh, I'm in another conversation over here. And, you know, but the reality is, this whole proposal was brought to them 2 months ago. If you're serious about really giving these people the money to relocate and then having them all come back to this wonderful new fancy child care center project with all kinds of wonderful frills, bells, and whistles, you'll put it on paper. You'll make a legal deal. You'll pass an ordinance, as you put it, Scott.
Right. And, you know, the thing that I want people to understand, too, is that most of the people like myself that are against what's happening right now aren't against affordable housing.
Definitely
aren't against building affordable housing somewhere in Beach Flats, even. What we're opposing is the method by which this project is moving forward.
And the substance
of
it, too.
And also the fact that there's actually going to be a net decrease in affordable housing if they build this project, as proposed right now. They could actually save these buildings. At least the Lee apartments are savable. I don't know about the Dolphin. They could be rehabilitated also.
Mm-hmm.
But the whole thing is we're going to have a net loss in the number of affordable units through this project, which seems totally asinine.
And unnecessary as well.
Right.
Wasteful. It also seems like we're following some pet bureaucrat's plan, and it's not even clear why, except that it, you know, puts the words affordable housing and neon lights on a little project, and it pleases some of the folks who put it forward.
Well, like Ed Fry said, this is just, these Mercy housing projects become big tax dodges for rich Catholics, so there's probably somebody out there that's going to either use this place as a tax shelter or make tons of money off of the construction of the place or something.
True enough. Let me, anything more you want to add on this subject? I know that tomorrow there is a meeting at the Lee Complex of tenants and supporters who want to find ways to organize against this project, and people might want to come down. Mayor Sugar was invited, by the way, to come to this by Nena Ruiz.
Oh, that's good. Maybe he'll show.
Maybe he'll show, and I think he'll have a number of questions to answer if he does.
I hope so. I mean, that's one of the things. I just can't understand the arrogance of our city council. They're treating a group of people, I guess because of a language barrier, they think all these people are stupid.